This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. January is often held up as a time for self-improvement. And for those of us who don't know where to start, there's always the copious shelves of self-help literature. The writer Jessica Lamb Shapiro set out to explore the $11 billion industry of self-improvement books, seminars, and coaching to figure out why people follow them so devoutly, if they work, and what happens when they don't. She's the author of a memoir called Promised Land, My Journey Through America's Self-Help Culture, and Virginia spoke with her last year.
So bring us back to the origins of self-help. You found records back in ancient Egypt, but it is a particularly American fixation. So help us understand that history.
Well, I did find a book of advice from father to son in ancient Egypt. And then I was trying to think outside of the box a little bit and not look at things that were prototypes for self-help. So not necessarily self-help books. So I looked at some ancient Greek texts like Marcus Aurelius, which you mentioned. I looked at parts of the Bible, like Proverbs, which gives us advice on how to live. There were etiquette books in the 1600s and 1700s, which I also consider to be prototypes for self-help books. And then self-help as we know it today really took off in the mid-19th century in England, actually. A man named Samuel Smiles wrote a book called Self-Help, which was basically a collection of inspirational stories similar to today's Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Well, we learn more about that Chicken Soup for the Soul franchise and its extremely, extremely successful author when you attend a conference that he gives. He has a kind of formula for how things are successful, and there is a kind of reliance on formula in a lot of self-help books, the inspirational story being one element, and this kind of imperative. You must do things this way. What are some examples of how that works on people?
Well, this was just taken from my own experience at this conference that I went to, where a self-help writer was teaching other self-help writers how to write self-help books. And he just kept telling us what to do, you know, do this, do that, even down to things that didn't really have to do with self-help, things about that we were given these binders with all these instructions and where to go. And I started to feel really comfortable and relaxed, and it really reminded me of being a child, which was kind of the last time that I'd had that experience of somebody really micromanaging my every move. And I started to wonder if that was kind of the appeal of self-help, is that you're sort of returned to this childhood-like state where the rules are very clear and you just understand what you're supposed to do. I think that it causes a lot of anxiety being a grown-up and not always knowing what to do in every situation.
You attended a workshop by one of the authors of the book, The Rules. Now, this was a 1995 book first on how to land a husband. Now it's pretty much a full-blown franchise with a pretty rigid set of absolutes. I'd love you to pick it up from there. What's their formula and what's the success story for someone who follows the rules?
Well, their formula is very similar to what we would call playing hard to get. It involves pretending not to be interested, and it's essentially like a manipulation of the other person where you present yourself as somebody who's distant and aloof, and you kind of cause the other person to, they call it the male is the hunter biologically. So you cause men to sort of hunt you, I suppose, like some sort of animal in the woods, and that will lead to marriage is their supposition. You know, and it may have worked for many people. In this particular instance where I went to the workshop, a woman named Betsy came, and she told a story of how she used the rules. And she said, "I'm the ultimate rules girl because I got married twice in 1 year." And
wow.
I was really surprised by that because I thought, wait, that doesn't sound right. Twice in 1 year, that means you got divorced. That doesn't seem like a success story.
Well, one of the suggestions or one of the rules for the rules is to make sure that all of your self-help books are out of sight if a man is coming over. So it seems like it's promoting a kind of shame at being the kind of person who would need the program that they are selling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just want to seem like this completely imperturbable, perfect person, which none of us are. And it seems like, you know, one flaw in that is that at some point you're going to relax and then you're going to reveal your true self. And that might be somebody who likes self-help books or, you know, does any number of potentially undesirable things. And, you know, to me, it seems better to get that stuff out front right in the beginning as opposed to kind of hide that stuff till the very end, because that could have disastrous consequences.
Well, it also seems to me that it's assuming that one can control an outcome. And you write something about that, about this fantasy of omnipotence, of controlling other people. And that's also part of the secret, you know, this idea that we control the universe of possibilities with our own thoughts. Something strikes me as so, you know, wonderfully optimistic about that, but also tragic. Well, what do you see?
I mean, I think that that's part of the reason we turn to self-help books. You know, mostly we turn to self-help books in times of helplessness and sometimes desperation. You usually don't read a self-help book when everything is going great in your life. And one of the things that can be scary about a difficult situation is that you really experience this lack of control. You know, relationship ends, you get fired, you've gained a lot of weight, you don't know how to take it off, and you just don't know how to get control of your life. And one thing that self-help books promise you is that you can regain that control. And very often with relationship books, they promise you even more on top of that, which is that you can control the behavior of another person. You know, you can make a man want to marry you, which, if you really think about it, is completely absurd. But I completely understand why that's such an attractive premise.
One of the things that came across to me is that a lot of the advice out there is bunk, and it's given by, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill people who just have a story. But you are very careful to say that people get a lot of relief and comfort and hope out of the experience of self-help in its many forms. How about for you? Did you come away feeling more hopeful about the prospect of self-help?
I did, in a sense. You know, in a very narrow sense. I still think there's a lot out there that is just ridiculous, ridiculous advice. But I think that as intelligent people, we're able to go to the bookstore and kind of weed out those books. And if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If something sounds a little crazy, it probably is. But there are a lot of books that make really reasonable promises and that also say, you know, they account for different kinds of experience. A lot of the books I liked on grieving said, you know, grief is really unique. No two people grieve the same way. So, you know, here's a bunch of advice. But if you don't find something useful, feel free to ignore it. And if you do find something useful, use it. So that kind of book, I mean, that approach to me is just so reasonable. It was hard to find anything too wrong with it.
Jessica Lam Shapiro, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Jessica Lam Shapiro's fiction and nonfiction have been published in The Believer, McSweeney's, and other publications. For more on her book, Promised Land, My Journey Through America's Self-Help Culture, visit wordofmouthradio.org. Lots more word of mouth to come in the next 12 months. So, whether you're ready for it or not, we'd like to wish you the best of luck in 2015 and happy listening. As always, there's more word of mouth anytime at wordofmouthradio.org. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. And from everybody here at Word of Mouth, Happy New Year!
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
and senior producer Maureen McMurray.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR,
its board of trustees,
or its underwriters. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.